With that, we're going to actually, we're at the new year. I don't know if any of you know this, but it's 2020. Okay, just in case you look like you might be, you're giving me a response like I'm concerned. I should be concerned you don't know this. Just a few of you maybe have been doing 19s. It is a new year. And with that, we're going to kick off kind of a new series and have an opportunity to go through a new book that I've been reading. I had a chance to listen to this particular author speak at a conference back in October, or was that October, November? I think it was October when we were in Dallas and got to go to the Naked Bible Conference, which is a lot of fun if you're a nerd. If you're not a nerd or if you're married to a nerd, you endure it. But this particular lady who spoke, I'd had a chance to listen to her a few years earlier in her research and her study for this particular book. It's actually her doctrinal dissertation turned into a book that you can read. And I loved what she did with it because she took her book and she gave it to her teenage daughter and had her read it and highlight any words she didn't understand, and then she would rewrite it. So it makes it very understandable. So we're going to take the next probably couple of months to go through this particular book. And if you're interested in doing this with us for the next set of Sundays, we'd be happy to provide you a book. If you can afford it, I'd love to have you pay for it. But if you can't, I don't want that to be a barrier, and we're happy to pick it up for you. And then you can go ahead and follow along with it. It's a very straightforward study. And this is actually the name of the book. It's Bearing God's Name, Why Sinai Still Matters. Anybody know what Sinai is? Anyone know what that? Is there anyone who doesn't know what Sinai? Yeah, I see people doing the steeple mountain thing. That's right. It's the mountain where Moses went to. And with it, it becomes kind of an interesting intro into the new year. And here's why. Here's why. New year, usually, I don't know if you've done this yet, maybe you're waiting till tomorrow like me, okay? Because we have this strange break, and when the holidays fall in the middle of the week, I kind of feel like the weekend after New Year's doesn't count. You're not where you need to really do the resolution thing yet, but, you know, so you've got a little time. So tomorrow, you know, things kick back in that I meant to do last year, and a few things that I meant to do in years prior. And that's this time of year. Anyone familiar with New Year's resolutions? Do I need to ask that question? I see a lot of heads nodding, right? And I like to kind of think of them, and I think they really are transitions. They're transitional opportunities. You're looking to go from one state of being or one place or one thing into another, and that requires some kind of a step and a transition as you do that. And I think it's interesting, maybe you've asked yourself this in the past, maybe you haven't, but why do you make a resolution? Why do you actually do that? Why do we do those things? I think that's interesting. And that's a question we're not necessarily going to explore right now, but it's one I think you and I would be wise to think about. Why do we do this every new year? And this is kind of a new thing. By new, I mean in the history of humankind, they tended to track things by seasons and growing patterns and that. But we get into the West, and especially the modern West, and New Year's becomes sort of this reset button almost. And it's a little unique to the West. It's just, in fact, not every country or people or nation celebrates New Year on the same day. So it's really kind of unique to us. And so it kind of begs a question as to why do we do it. But then I think another question that's even more interesting is, why can't we make it through? Let me ask this question. Any of you ever started a resolution? Do I need to finish it? And didn't make it. Anybody? Okay, I got a couple hands. A few brave souls are raising that hand to say, yep, some of us started it. We didn't quite get there. And then you kind of hit the summer or the fall and you think, well, this is usually our excuse, right? You get to the fall and you're going, well, it's going to be Thanksgiving soon and then Christmas and I'm going to let myself go because I have no self-control, so I might as well just wait till the next year. Is this sounding familiar at all? Okay? And I think it's because really when we get into this transitionary phase, it's kind of a scary thing. It's sort of a scary time. I like to think of them this way, that they're kind of a place of becoming and going. When you think about it that way, when you make a resolution, you want to change something in your life. That means you're now on a journey to become something. And that journey can be a bit of a challenge. And you might reach a point where you decide that you aren't interested in doing that, I'm going back. And these periods I like to just think of as becoming and going, because you are going somewhere. The question is, which way are you going to go, and are you going to stick to it? And that's a fascinating question. And it's hard to become something different. You might be able to look at your neighbor and go, man, you are not who you were a year ago, 2 years ago, 5, 10 years ago. You are something different. And that has taken time, especially if you've been intentional about it. That becoming what you could, maybe even should be, or that going back to what we know is safe or the known. It's interesting because you might think to yourself, does this have any kind of basis in Scripture? And actually it does. Israel went through something like this. And Sinai, as it turns out, is sort of a peak moment, no pun intended, where it became the point of their transition. In fact, the introduction to this story goes all the way back here to Exodus. We can just read it really quickly. This is God speaking to Moses. Go and gather the elders of Israel together and say to them, the Lord Yahweh, the God of your fathers, the God of Abraham, of Isaac and Jacob, has appeared to me, saying, that's to Moses, I have observed you and what has been done to you in Egypt. And I promise that I will bring you up out of the affliction of Egypt to the land of the Canaanites, the Hittites, the Amorites, the Perizzites, the Hivites, and the Jebusites. All those names that Mary spoke of in her video that she couldn't pronounce. A land flowing with milk and honey, which became known as the Promised Land. Right here in this moment, Moses is going to say, I'm going to take you to the people of Israel. I'm going to take you lead you from Egypt into a promised land. Right? So let's just make sure we've caught this. They were delivered from, go ahead, help me out, Egypt, right? And they're on their way to the Promised Land, okay? And in the middle of that, they've got this transitional period, right? Yeah, it ends up being 40 years. Didn't have to be, but that's what it ends up being. Now, do we have any smart people in the room who know what that word is, liminal? Anyone know what that word means? I checked with my resident writer and journalist who I'm married to, the loveliest person in the world. And she said, I've never heard of that word. And I will be honest with you, when I read it, I hadn't heard of it either. But turns out it's actually an interesting word, this word liminal. We're going to learn a new word today. I know it's not a Bible word, but it's a Bible concept, believe it or not. It is. It's fascinating. Here's the way you can easily understand it. If you stand in a doorway, you are not in either room. It's in a place where you're not quite where you came from and you're not quite where you're going to. You're in a transitional space. If you've ever flown in an airport, and an airport, you're not where you left from, right? If you're in the middle of your flight and you're not to your destination, nobody lives in airports. They just move through them one way or the other. That's kind of the concept of a liminal space. I made a little graphic for you. Maybe it'll help a little bit. Just kind of put this together. Turns out it's a psychological term. I had no idea. I had no idea about this. It's fascinating, right? But just this is kind of that moment. You've kind of got this old part of you, this old self that you have to separate from when you're going to make a change. That resolution comes and you have to put something aside and you've got to leave that for just a moment. And as you move through that transition period, you're in this liminal space on your way to this new being that you want to be, this new person. And in the middle of that, people will call that these spiritual, you'll have these spiritual moments, or this kind of in-between thing. You'll have little signs that will come along the way that will tell you, yes, keep doing this, or no, don't do this at all. And here's the fear, kind of up there in the blue, is that in the old side, here's what you'll hear yourself say, nothing will ever change. And on the new side, nothing will ever be the same. And when you find yourself in the middle of that space, some interesting things happen because it's scary. It's unknown. This is what Carmen wrote. I think it's good, so I just put it up because I think it's helpful. For Israel, the wilderness journey from Egypt to Canaan is liminal space. They're not there. They're not where they came from. Far more than just a place to pass through, it's the workshop of Israel's becoming. The wilderness is the temporary destination that makes them who they are. Liminal places always do this. They change us. You ever found that to be the case? You find yourself moving from one place to another in your life. And when you come out on the other end, whether you've returned to where you started or you made the journey through, have you ever noticed you're not quite the same? Something's changed. And there's not much you can do about it. We underestimate the disorienting effect, the strangeness, the unusualness, the discomfort, all of those adjectives of being in a spot where we're not quite where we want to be just yet. We don't want to go back, and we're not quite sure how we're going to get to the other side yet. And I think this is true for everyone, regardless of your stage of life or age. You watched your children go through this when you started to hold them accountable, to be responsible a little bit. And what did you see? You saw them return a little bit to the tantrums of the younger years because it was scary. They didn't want to. But you continued to encourage and press them a little forward until they were able to do it. And you got them through that discomfort of that time. It's an unstable place. It's unknown. It can feel unsafe. Right? Think about Israel. They're liberated from Egypt, but they haven't arrived where they're supposed to go. They've stopped at this mountain where they've got some really fascinating things happening, right? They've witnessed some crazy miracles. They've heard this God speak. They have seen things that they just can't even begin to describe. But everything they knew, everything in their life has been left behind. And there is no going back. It is not a return option. They have no... Think about this. They're slaves. There's no photos of the land where they're going. They can't YouTube Canaan. They can't get onto some kind of travel guide and understand where it is that we're going. That doesn't exist. And it turns out, it feels like or seems like, God is in no hurry to move them along. He's just dragging His feet, so to speak. Right? I mean, you would think, this God who can do these amazing things can just sort of teleport them out. I'll give you another example of what this can be like. We as a church support and have supported in the past an organization, Voices Against Violence. It's a woman's shelter in town where people are, women and sometimes their children, are leaving a violent situation at home. And oftentimes when they arrive with what they have. That's it. Sometimes the clothes on their back. No, maybe a few diapers, perhaps a bottle or two and some formula if they have infants with them. Maybe they had a little time to pack. They show up. That's it. They are in a liminal space. They have left where they have come from. They only have a vision of where they need to be, but they are not at their destination. Can you imagine? Can you imagine how disorienting? And the moment you have a moment in time, maybe where you're at peace and you're feeling safe for the first time, and that thought crosses your head, oh my goodness, what did I just do? Is this the right thing? Maybe I made a mistake. Maybe He'll change. Maybe it was me. Have any of you ever experienced a moment like that? That's where they are. And you and I, like Israel, might think, where is this God? It's in that moment that you begin to sort of question, maybe this isn't real. Maybe I'm not supposed to be here. Maybe I missed something. Maybe I screwed something up. But what we see in the story with Sinai is God continues to speak. He offers himself as a solution. He reveals his name to them, and he's going to begin to teach them and ask them to walk in some trust. And they've never done that before. Ever. Ever. It's like the moment you become a Christian or a follower of Jesus, and the first time somebody says, well, just have faith, just follow Jesus, and you don't have a clue what that means because you've never done that before. And no one's ever taken the time to show you. It's a very disorienting, unusual space. Oh, and by the way, just so you know, a little tidbit, there was a faster route. There was. It's in Scripture. It's right here. It's in Exodus. When Pharaoh let the people go, God did not lead them by the way of the land of the Philistines. Although that was near. That was closer. They could have just followed the coast. Sorry. They could have just followed the coast up from Egypt, up in there, been there maybe in a few weeks, 2 or 3 weeks, and been there. But he doesn't take them that route. He takes them on a journey. Let's take the scenic route. We're going to stop by a mountain, have a little chat. Spend a little time there, right? For God said, the people might change their minds when they come up through here and see all of this war and they turn themselves around and go right back to where they started. But instead, he led them the long way around. And isn't that the case? Have you ever started a New Year's resolution or you've ever started a change in your life and you just, have you ever known that person? Maybe you're not it. It's just gung-ho. Like, they want the change in the next 24 to 48 hours. They're measuring success by that. And when it doesn't happen, they're frustrated. I have people like that in my family. Let me just say that. Yes, there's a shortcut. But sometimes, when you shortcut it, what happens? It goes even worse. Gets a little sideways. You're not quite prepared for what's coming. And you're like, no, I'm going back to where that... And so, you've heard this person say this. I tried that. It didn't work. Really? Yes. I tried. Think of it this way. Let's go back to the example of a woman, perhaps a mom, leaving and arriving at a shelter. And her expectation is that she's going to have a home, security, money in the bank, life completely changed, perhaps a new love within the week. But it doesn't happen. I tried it. It didn't work. Or maybe you're trying to stop a habit or quit an addiction. Yeah, I gave it up for a week, but I couldn't handle it. A week? Really? Went all in. Took the shortcut. We don't want to do that because you might change your mind when you see how hard it is to do this. If you're not sure why the Christian life is hard, go back a couple of messages and you'll find out that Jesus said the path to life is narrow and difficult. It's hard. Hard to make the right choices. And trust takes time. Too risky to go too fast. And so as it turns out, this wilderness is really God's classroom that they're in. And you and I will find ourselves in these wilderness. Wilderness, is that correct? Wilderness, that just came right out. It's a new year. Okay, go with me. I think I've got Bush, in my bloodline somewhere. Right? This wilderness, God's classroom, check this out. This is so important. Don't miss this. This wilderness you may find yourself in is oftentimes the only place that this kind of work can be done in your mind, in your heart, in your soul. Real transitions and change in your life oftentimes can only happen in a liminal space where you're in between. If you're where you started from, you're not going to really be motivated to change. And if you've arrived, you've already done it. And in the middle of it, there's just sometimes some work that can only happen when you're in the middle. And it becomes this place of becoming and going. And this is where I can just simply say, if you make that decision If you decide, I want to move from where I am today to this place over here, don't rush it. You're going to ask yourself some questions like, who's in charge here? Be patient with that because God's moving through this with you. Remember, He sometimes takes the long route, right? The easy short route sometimes doesn't work for you. And that time of moving through it is where you look and you listen and you learn and you learn a lot of patience. Anyone who has ever gone through this, have you learned patience? Anyone ever gone through this moment of transition, of pain? You come out going, ooh. And you discover something amazing about yourself. You discover that you can make it. And if you were paying attention, you will learn something else. And that is that in the wilderness, it requires you and I to show some patience and some compassion to ourselves. Because we're going to have these moments of going back and forth and we're not sure if it's going to work. But more than that, if we've really gone through it and paid attention and we know what that feels like, we're going to understand that as people find themselves in that journey, we owe them some patience and some compassion too. I think this is why the New Testament writers would say, be patient. Forgive one another. Have compassion on one another. Why? Because when you start this journey of following, especially following Jesus, and you begin to move into this time where you're changing, things are just changing. It's really hard. And it's really scary. And there's a lot of discomfort. And you come to a place like this and you feel like, I've got to put on a brave face. I've got to tell people it's okay. I don't want people to know that I feel so uncomfortable in this spot and I'm not sure if this was the right decision. And it's incumbent upon us to understand that we need to have patience and compassion with ourselves as we move through that and with others. I use the word courtesy there because I think it's an important word. Because as it turns out, liminal places are messy. I know there are some who have had the opportunity to put relationships that were broken back together. And any time that's happened, you know there were moments that were really messy. It just happens. That's what happens. And this relationship that we have with our Heavenly Father sometimes is no different. Sometimes it's broken. Sometimes it's together and it's good. And when it gets broken, it gets messy and it gets weird and we get frustrated. In fact, if you look at this journey as we go through this book, we're going to find out that Israel got super frustrated, really rebellious. This relationship would get all kinds of tension within it. Being in that spot is messy, and that's okay. It's okay. They're messy. But they're worth it. They're always worth it. They're always worth the effort. And that's why as we kind of come into this new year, I want to come through this and look at it. These people of Israel were coming through it and we can look at it. We can look at them and think, oh, were they worth it? Yes, they were. It's this people that God reveals Himself to, that He gives His name to. He said, you're going to be my representative. And here's the funny thing. He didn't ask him to clean up before he did the agreement. He hauled him out of Egypt. A disaster. He didn't ask him to change everything before he made this contract and covenant agreement with them. He just drug him out of the land and said, I've picked you. And as it turns out, he saw them as worth it. He sees you and I as worth it. He's asked us, in carrying His name into the world, to treat others as though they're worth it. Because it is. So perhaps you'll journey with me for the next few months on what it means to take this name of God upon ourselves, being a follower of God, and what that means and what that looks like for you and for me and for the world around us. Because I believe, and I agree with God, you're worth it. We're worth it.